Hello and welcome to Ed Talks, the podcast from King Edward School Birmingham and King Edward High School for Girls, where I speak to usually old Edwardians who've gone on to do wonderful things with their lives since crossing Edgbaston Park Road for the very final time. My name is Ben Anderson. I am a podcast producer. I'm in a company called Sound Rebel, and I love doing this podcast. Today, we're not joined by an old Ed, but we are joined by someone who's got an incredibly interesting job within the foundation. Now, Charlotte Gallant, thank you ever so much for joining me on the podcast today. I think when you think of education in the school system, in general, there are jobs that you get at every single school. I'm pretty sure that yours wouldn't be one of them. You are the foundation archivist. First of all, welcome to Ed Talks.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Charlotte, can you explain what your job is? So is it, I got that right, foundation archivist?
Absolutely, yes. It's fun enough. One of the questions I get asked all the time, you know, what do you do? And you say, when you say an archivist, people think you've actually meant anarchist or alchemist or, you know, people don't generally understand what an archivist is. But to explain, you have to sort of give a bit of background as to what an archive is. And an archive is traditionally a big collection of records, which is generally about a particular place, so your local county record office, for example, maybe a business, and there's some really successful businesses such as Cadbury's and M&S that have their own archives, which have thousands and thousands of sort of clothing designs and packaging designs and some really interesting visual stuff. Or it's about a particular person. So Jane Austen, for example, I think the University of Birmingham across the road has the Noel Coward collection. And the Foundation Archive is brilliant because it's all three of those and even more. So it's a really, really busy, interesting, thriving collection of records. And by records, it's not just dusty old paper. It's VHS, it's building plans, it's photographs, it's newsletters, it's artifacts. So we've got trophies, old uniforms, canes, which are ever so slightly terrifying, guns from the CCF, and it's constantly evolving and changing and still growing today. So it's a career. It's quite difficult to explain, but I think once you kind of lay the basics of what an archive is, an archivist is someone who has to look after all this stuff and keep expanding the collection, basically.
How do you decide what goes in the archive? I mean, could this podcast, for example, one day enter into the King Edward School archive?
I would love this to go in.
It's one of those things where, you know, I thought when you said archivist, it's just very much kind of, you know, paper archives. It's, as you say, it's the records, it's the articles. But I didn't think it would be guns from the CCF. Like, where do you keep all this stuff?
So I've got a small room. I say small, it's got quite a lot of the rolling racking. I don't know if you see that in films sometimes. People always ask me, do you try and recreate Star Wars where you try and smush someone in between the two of those? And absolutely not. I definitely haven't done that yet. So I've got a room. It's temperature controlled. It's humidity controlled. Basically, the cooler you keep it, sort of the longer preservation life you have for documents and negative, you know, photographic negatives, things like that. And then a lot of the schools will have their own collection as well. So I work with all 13 schools across the foundation. It's 12 at the moment, 13 when Lordswood come on. And Aston has their own huge collection there, which is amazing. Some schools don't really have anything at all, and that's just because they just haven't either thought so much about the history of the school, or they just haven't had time. And it's one of those battles you're constantly fighting, really, and that everyone is so busy. You know, a lot of the time you don't have that opportunity to sort of look backwards and sort of think about where you've come from and sort of what's happened in the last 40 years, just in terms of education and Birmingham and the history of the school. So it's quite a luxury in a way to have an archive, I think, but a necessary one.
We'll get onto the school, and we're going to obviously focus on KS and KHS in terms of the history of those two schools in our chat today. But just a bit more about you, Charlotte. Are you a hoarder at home? Have you got one of these houses that you can't walk in because you walk in and suddenly there's, you know, photo albums from your mum that you took from 1985 and, you know, have you just got boxes full of newspapers?
I'm not that bad. There's two schools of thought when you sort of become an archivist because you have to go and get a qualification in it, and that you're either a Jenkinson or a Schellenberg. And this is really nerdy, so I do apologise. Jenkinson was sort of the first guy that sort of thought about the theory of archiving, and his approach was keep everything. And then this relatively young guy, I think it was sort of, you know, 1900s, actually said, "Ah, Jenkinson, you're an old fool. Actually, you need to be cutting back and sort of really sort of honing in on what you should be keeping and what you're throwing away." And his name was Schellenberg. So it was a bit of a joke in the archive community, you know, so you're either a Jenkinson or a Schellenberg. And unfortunately, because archives are so prolific and you could potentially keep absolutely everything, you know, you really have to be more sort of concise about what you keep and what you throw away. And it's, in some ways, it's a bit of a guessing game. You've got to think, okay, what's going to be interesting to pupils, to people interested in the history of education in 100, 200 years' time? You know, how are they going to access this material? So sort of when you were talking about maybe this podcast could be part of the archive, I would love that. But you've then got to think about how people would actually access that in terms of sort of digital file migration and whether you have a paper transcript, but then that's more space. You know, it's a real fine art, and I really hope I get it right.
I'm sure you are. I do love the idea that you're either a Jenkinson or a Schellenberg. Is that used as an insult, or you're such a Jenkinson?
Oh, occasionally. It depends how you feel about it. I feel a bit sorry for Jenkinson, really. Yeah, he was very old, and it was lovely for someone to think, actually, yes, I can keep everything and have this perfect record of absolutely everything that happened. Because archives really, they shouldn't be censored. They need to be honest, even if what you're recording is maybe not necessarily a good thing. But of course, you know, documents really, they keep an accurate record of what happens in a school or a business. And then if someone comes in and says, well, actually, that doesn't show us in a good light, let's get rid of that, then that's kind of too far. You've gone to Schellenberg then. It's, potentially quite detrimental to sort of how the organisation will be remembered in the future.
It's probably a good thing then that you didn't go to the school, because obviously you've got to be an objective archivist, haven't you?
Absolutely.
You know, you can't. This is the history of the school now, because you're in this role. And there's been a number of people in this role before you, but you've been here for 9 months, and this is now the history of the school that you've decided to preserve, which is really, it's a big responsibility.
It is. It's quite terrifying when you stop and think about it, really, which is why I truly, really try and engage with all the schools and sort of talk to them about what do they want to keep, what do they think is important. So at the moment, we've got a lot of things in the archive, like sort of drama programmes and music programmes, which I think are really, really lovely. I'm slightly biased because I was a really big, at school, you know, really big into drama and music and less so into sports. So any of those sort of little programmes or ticket stubs, I think, are fascinating. And it's interesting what we keep, in that you sort of want to keep that one side which is very formal. So it's admission records, it's governor order books and building plans. But on the other side, you want the fun stuff as well. So ticket stubs and newspaper cuttings. So when you're trying to sort of promote your archive, you sort of think, OK, what would be interesting to pupils from today? And maybe ticket stubs from a performance in the 1930s that now they're doing in the school today, actually sort of seeing that comparison might be quite interesting to somebody.
This is a slight tangent, but if you come across anything from 2005 to do with the Symphony Hall and Choral Society, please feel free to just remove that from our archive. I got sent a video a couple of weeks ago by a friend of us singing. Obviously, his mom had taken it in the crowd, and I didn't realise just how much I looked like my Auntie Anne with that haircut at the time. So feel free to completely get rid of anything. Let's say 2004 to 2006, just to be safe.
I'll make a note.
Thank you. Let's bring it back then to the school itself, because in doing my research for this conversation, there are some amazing things that have happened at King Edward School that I had absolutely no idea about. And I think I mentioned this before we started recording. When you think back to the school and you think about the history of the school, you think about your history with the school. I can't believe that this is not the 6,888th, is it? It's the 6,888th. Central Postal Directory Battalion. It's a bit of a mouthful, that one. But basically, the army took over the school's playing fields and a few buildings in 1939 during World War II. And they were there for the duration of the war, weren't they? The Americans and the UK troops.
Pretty much. The 6,888 were, just to give it of context, were the first female black battalion sent over to the UK, and their job was to sort out the post, because an army kind of marches on its stomach and, you know, really wants news from home. It keeps them going. It's a morale thing. And they were posted to Birmingham, I think they were then posted to Paris, and they were kind of went around all over the place. But yes, they stayed on the school site, I think it was for a couple of years. It was in the old temporary buildings. They're no longer there. I think they were used as sort of teaching sort of blocks later on. But yeah, they lived there, they worked there. Unfortunately, we don't actually have a great deal about it in the archive, which is such a shame. We've got the building plans of the buildings they lived in and sort of newspaper articles sort of from the Birmingham Mail and the Post, sort of how the locals reacted to it, which was actually generally quite positive, which is lovely. But then they've also got their own archive and sort of they talk about their experiences of it. And I think they found it quite cold, quite damp. Bit of a change from America, which was much nicer, apparently. But they had a really interesting, you know, role and something you don't really hear about. But there is a blue plaque now, apparently, on the one of the gates sort of down on the Bristol Road, which is really lovely.
Very cool. It's those kind of things, those kind of stories. I'm going to admit now, I don't know when the school was founded. I can't give you a year the school was founded. So the boys' school or the girls' school. Can we take it right back? Can you give us a kind of, I don't know how easy this is to do, a brief history?
Oh my God. Of King Edward's School? So the first sort of documentary evidence we have for the school is the charter that Edward VI issued for Birmingham for the creation of a school. And that was in the 1500s. And from there, the school really expanded. You have this beautiful, huge building sort of in the Georgian period, which sort of, I don't know if you know the Odeon on New Street.
Yes, it's a bit of a, you always used to say that when we go to the Odeon. You know, I can't believe that this used to be, it used to be the school, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was, I mean, you look at sort of the buildings in New Street and you've got some of those wonderful kind of brickwork. It was this huge kind of cathedral-like sort of shape right in the middle. Which, yeah, you, as you say, you can't even imagine it being like that today. And you have cars going past. And then that building only lasted for about 100 years. And then it was knocked down. And then the very famous Charles Barry School was built with help from Pugin. Charles Barry also did the Houses of Parliament, just to give you an idea of what it looked like. And wow. Yeah, it was right in the middle of this sort of bustling, huge city centre. I interviewed our oldest Edwardian at the beginning of the year, Ronald Naylor. He's 108 and he remembers the school. I know.
Wow.
He remembers the layout perfectly, which is astonishing. I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday. And this guy will say, you know, that he got the train from Hall Green at 7:30 and he had to run to the school and try and get there by 9. If he wasn't on time, the porter, who he knew, Mr. Ford, he knew his name, would give you a detention. Usually reciting poetry or something awful like that. And he was saying that, you know, you'd go down the corridor and if you went to the left, that would be Mr. So-and-so's classroom where they taught Latin. And yeah, it was incredible what he remembered of the school. But he really portrayed it as sort of this bustling environment. And funnily enough, I was looking through sort of articles because I write a monthly blog. And one of them was about how a sheep got into the school. And they had spent an afternoon like chasing it around. I think it was Mr. England, who was the headmaster at the time, actually had to sort of try and herd it in where it was sort of cornered, and then they eventually got rid of it.
The only story I've heard about a sheep was an end of year prank, and I'm not trying to give any current students listening any ideas here, but apparently they released, as a boy who lived on a farm, brought in two of his sheep, labelled them 1 and 3, and set them off in the school, and obviously they found 1 and 3, but then spent the rest of the day looking for 2 that didn't exist.
That's genius, though.
Yeah. Do you have that in the archives, the end
I
of
don't.
The year?
Please, can you send me any details? That would be fantastic.
Yeah. There's some very famous ones that we can talk about, which I probably shouldn't talk about. I won't talk about now. Okay, so when did the school move then to Edgbaston?
1933 is when the building work started. And then, of course, it was disrupted by the Second World War. So pupils, I've got photographs of some pupils actually having lessons kind of around all this brickwork, which is really impressive. But I think it was late 30s, early 40s, the school officially finally sort of opened on the campus.
And why did the school move? Did the Odeon just make the foundation an offer it couldn't refuse?
No, I don't think it was anything to do with the Odeon at all. Although, funnily enough, Oscar Deutsch, who obviously started the Odeon was an old Edwardian. I think he went to Five Ways. So there's a really weird connection for you. As you sort of research more, like old Edwardians keep cropping up everywhere. It's really weird. I didn't realise how prolific you all are.
I was talking on the last episode to Howard Williamson about this, and he was saying that he remembers being at school and the chief master at the time saying, like, you know, you are the future leaders of this country. And he'd thinking, oh, whatever. You know, what is it? But then it's funny, isn't it? You see the old Eds everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's whether it's at the top of the BBC or whether it's, on this podcast, I've spoken to His Honour Nicholas Cook QC, who was a judge at the Old Bailey. I've spoken to Dame Louise Makin. She was one of the only five female CEOs in the FTSE 250.
Wow.
At one point, head of a big pharmaceutical company. Authors, Lee Child went to the school.
Yeah.
Jim Grant, I spoke to Jim on this podcast. Right, back to the school then, back to the history of the school. Because there are some awesome things that have happened at the school. I mean, we should probably talk about the Queen. The Queen came to King Edward's. How long would that be then?
So she was coronated in 53, and 1955 is when she visited the school in November. So
she was just queen then?
It's funny enough, I interviewed six old Edwardians, five from Kes and one from the girls' school, about their memories of the day and what they thought. And one said, oh, I didn't realise women wore so much makeup. My mum never wore so much, which I thought was a lovely thing to say. But they were all sort of amazed how youthful she was and how young she was, a really young monarch. And it was just amazing how much they could remember about the day. The weather was awful. Apparently it was absolutely torrential. And there was so much rehearsal beforehand. It was, I think on the day it was almost kind of a relief to kind of actually have the real thing rather than the rehearsals. I spoke to one chap who was from the CCF, and they had sort of to do the guard of honour at the front and sort of salute as the Queen came in. And then there was an art exhibition. So several pupils were selected to sort of display their art. And one chap, he was sort of saying, I made this really ugly tray. It was awful. And I had a black eye as well. And I had to explain to the Duke of Edinburgh how I got a black eye because he asked. And the real story was that he'd been in a fight the previous day. but he didn't want to say this to the Duke of Edinburgh. So he just said, oh, I walked into a door or something like that. And I think I don't know whether the prince believed him or not, but that was the answer he gave. Yeah, it was an amazing experience to interview these people, and they remembered so much. We talked not just about the Queen's visit, but their memories of Kes as well. And going back to that weird links of sort of meeting people, I used to work at a museum sort of in Warwickshire, and I was sort of talking outside of filming to one of the old Edwardians, and he just went, I designed that building. So it was just, again, a really weird kind of link. You keep cropping up everywhere.
I suppose with so many years behind the school now, I mean, the oldest Edwardians, 108, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah.
There's going to be a few of us around, aren't there?
Hi, I'm Salma.
And I'm Shweb.
We're student fundraisers talking to you about the Assisted Places Fund.
So, I suppose you're wondering, why should you donate to the Assisted Places Fund?
Essentially, we want to help give others the opportunities we were both fortunate enough to have and give them access to our wide-ranging curriculum and ambitious co-curricular programme.
Thank you for listening. And to give, visit the Old Edwardian website.
When was the girls' school built?
So it was, again, in sort of the 1800s when everything was really expanding. And it actually came in at the same time as the grammar schools, which was 1880s, I want to say. But yes, so there was a sort of suggestion in, I think, the 1860s that there should be a school for girls in Birmingham. And I think someone said, oh, yes, that's a really good idea. And then 20 years later, this actually sort of happened that there were a few classes in the boys' school, which were just for girls. And I think there was a huge outcry. And I think, you know, from there it kind of grew. And then because it became more and more popular, I think the girls got their own section. They actually built a wall in the school, so the boys and the girls could not interact at all. And then when the boys' school moved here, I believe they actually built the girls' school as well at the same time. And yes, continued from there, very much segregated according to the old Edwardians I spoke to who attended in the 50s. They said the boys in the girls' school just didn't interact at all. But I don't know when that interaction started happening, because I believe it's a lot more coexisting now.
Probably when exam results started getting worse. Correlation. it's obviously, I don't know as much about the history of the girls' school as I do about, even my knowledge of the boys' school history is limited. But from my conversations with women who went to the girls' school, they talk about how progressive the school felt in terms of, you know, in an environment where women weren't equal, and you could argue that it's still not the case today, mm-hmm. we've still got a lot of work to do. But when it was more overt, when it was thought that women should support the man in terms of the man going to work, a woman should be at home. What a lot of people have said to me who went through that school is it wasn't just from the head teacher. It was almost from every single staff member that was there at the girls' school. They were encouraged to do exactly whatever they wanted to do in life. Don't worry about anybody else. You think about you. You can achieve. You can go and do. Was it always quite progressive in that sense? Was it always kind of ahead of its time?
That's certainly the impression I get from reading the history and speaking to some of the old Edwardians who attended in sort of the 50s. The lady I spoke to, Rosalind, who, funnily enough, is now an author, but she attended King Edward's. She started in 1953. And the head teacher at the time, whose name escapes me, was a zoologist, which, you know, I think is a really strange background for a head teacher to have. But it really pushes this emphasis on sort of the sciences rather than art and literature, which is maybe where you would see more stereotypically, you know, women going into, which I think is really interesting and certainly not something I've come across in other schools, which I think is a fantastic, you know, fantastic for Birmingham that they've been sort of so progressive in that.
You mentioned that, obviously, you know, you are looking at this and you're making conclusions based on looking at the archives, which I think is just fascinating. I mean, what can you tell about this? This is you personally. What kind of reflections have you got from looking at the archives? What can you tell about the school itself and the people that went there, the boys and girls on the Edgbaston campus? Can you tell what it was like from the archives, or is it all quite analytical and, you know,
I mean,
factual? And
you're never going to get a perfect read of a place because, you know, you are just sort of taking elements of the school as it was at that time in terms of photographs, in terms of performances and sports. But the fact that these records are here, I think, is a fantastic start. Because if a school didn't care about its history and its background or, you know, the things that it's achieved over the years, then that material just wouldn't be saved. The fact that a school or any organisation has an archive, I think, is a huge plus point because it shows that you care about your heritage. You care of things that you've done and you're proud of those accomplishments. And I think that is fantastic for any organisation to, you know, revel in that sort of nostalgia and that heritage. And because there's so much of it here, and particularly for Kez, you know, and it's everything. It's photographs of the scouts, photographs of the CCF, and not just photographs, but sort of almost, you've got the glass plate negatives, you know, those really sort of old, sort of the pre film negative. And it's a pride in the heritage, which has just gone back and gone back and gone back. And it's more than, it's a tradition. It's just sort of almost a way of life in a way. I'm sounding very cliched, I'm sorry. But no, I think, you look at an archive sometimes and you think, oh, okay, they actually haven't thought about this. They don't really care. They've just shoved some stuff in a box and just hoped for the best. But when I came here, I was really impressed by just how looked after this collection was. And my predecessor did a wonderful job. She did the World War I exhibition in the chapel, which was brilliant. I saw the end of that and that was great. And she'd really researched, you know the chapel, and it's got the names of all the sort of the fallen who attended King Edward's. She had researched every single one of those names. She'd got photographs, you know, had a really detailed background. And I thought that was fabulous that someone actually took the time and the love and the dedication to do that. And it's something that I really want to sort of put into my work here, you know, during my time. I hope I'm around to sort of celebrate the World War II anniversary. I'm already thinking about what I can do for that. And yeah, I think that any organisation that keeps those kind of records and aspires to kind of remember people in that way is a really fantastic organisation that I certainly want to be part of.
So you've been a part of it for 9 months. What's gone into the archive over the last 9 months?
The first thing I had to process was a straw boater, which was never handled one before. It was in pretty good condition. It was a little bit dusty, but I had to do a bit of conservation work and just clean it a little bit. There's been a lot of photographs, a lot of documents, and because Lordswood has just joined us, they have given me about 20 boxes. It's a very good thing you can't see my office, because it is an absolute state at the moment of dusty records, which all need to be cleaned and organized and sorted. Most
old rifles and berets and all sorts of stuff.
There are a couple of hats, but no rifles, sorry. It's as a profession, it's really interesting. You never quite know what you're going to get in the mornings. Sort of my day-to-day role, I generally focus on what emails I get, because I get a lot of inquiries about so-and-so's grandfather, or can you remember when so-and-so happened, you know, what happened and when this occurred. So it's a lot of research. But then the rest of the day is just sorting out boxes of things that have come in and trying to fix them, or maybe it actually needs a proper conservator, in which case I would go and take it to her. And you never quite know what you're going to get. It's brilliant. And I haven't come across any spiders or earwigs or infestations, which is brilliant. You know, last job, it was not so much. But
I worry that your email inbox will be even fuller after this podcast comes out. Because do people send you things then? Is that where did the straw boater come from?
That came from a lady who was clearing out her grandfather's house. And he was an old Edwardian. He had the straw boater. I think there were a couple of ties and just a few documents. It's, I would say, half of sort of donations are people that are clearing out homes, not necessarily any relatives. Maybe it's just they've found something and it's got King Edward's on, or they know that it's come from King Edward's, so they, rather than chucking it away, they want to see if we're interested, which is brilliant. And then the rest is from the schools themselves. And, you know, someone will say, oh, I'm clearing out this drawer and I found this old paperwork. Would you be interested? And I always say yes, because I want to see what it is and whether it will fit in with the collection. And, you know, we have a lot of gaps in sort of some areas. So it'd be really nice to kind of get an even sort of spread of absolutely everything. It's 50-50, I would say, at the moment. But we'll see after this.
If someone's inspired to go and go, you know what? Back of that cupboard, I know that there's this insert, whatever it is here, and they want to send it to you. How do they do that, Charlotte?
Pop me an email, charlotte.gallant, and that's GALLANT, at ske.uk.net.
Fabulous. And I suppose you mentioned earlier this cold, dark room where you keep everything. Is that something that can people visit? Can you go into that? Or is it because obviously there's lots of old stuff in there? Is it a secret room that only you know the location?
I think you're giving it a lot more mystery than it actually deserves. It's really not that exciting.
Is it not kind of like, you know, like a Hogwarts-esque, you've got to go down staircase number 3 and then, you know, into the bowels of the school?
Absolutely.
Deep underground.
Have to, you know, whisper a secret password to a door which very slowly opens, then you must pass the riddles and the tests. And I mean, it's we're based sort of at the top of the drive at the foundation office. And it's just me, my office, and this very big room. So if anyone would like to visit, you're very welcome. The tour will take about 5 seconds. But I mean, we have had people in the past who are researching. We had someone who was researching some land in Birmingham, which King Edward's used to be involved with, but isn't anymore. But we still have the records. I think that was from about the 1700s. So he came in and did some research. He wasn't particularly interested in the archive storage, but was very interested in the documents, which was lovely. So if anyone wanted to come and look at some records, you're very, very welcome. I'm still in the process of cataloguing everything. So at the moment, if someone says, have you got this, I will go and check. When I finish cataloguing, hopefully in a couple of years, because there's about 1,000 boxes, maybe more, then I will just be able to sort of type up and go, oh yes, there it is, this is what we have, and these are the dates it spans from, please come in. So it's a work in progress, I'm afraid.
Charlotte, it's been great to chat to you. I've really enjoyed learning more about just a job that I never knew existed. I don't mean to offend when I say that, but I can't believe that the school has got an archivist. Like,
not an alchemist, not an activist, not the Antichrist. It's an archivist.
Yes, an archivist, a Jenkinson-esque. No,
a Schellenberg leanings. I'm afraid. You know, you've got to be. Concise in a way.
Of course, I'll tell you, it's the new way of thinking. But then it also makes total sense because, as you said, the school has been around since the 1500s. Mm. You know, it's the generations of people that have passed through this school. You know, it's I suppose that you're looking at a history of, in a way, Birmingham as well, aren't you? Oh. Kind of looking at how the school's developed.
Absolutely. And I mean, some of our oldest records are the Governor Order books, and they go back to, I think, 1650s. And you've got to think, okay, at that time, what was happening in the country? You've got Oliver Cromwell, Charles II has already been beheaded, and you think that was kind of contemporary for these people. And then it's sort of, you carry on, you get the pupil records from the 1800s. Okay, what was happening then? Okay, that was Napoleon and Trafalgar and all that sort of era. So it's really interesting, up to sort of modern day, where you've got VHS videos of Busted attending in 2003, which is slightly less exciting, but still part of I think that was Camp Hill Girls, still part of the history. So it's really varied and interesting, and no two days are the same.
It sounds great. And if you ever need any ideas, I've got loads of ideas, by the way, for obviously, you're in the role now and hopefully there for a while. It's not just about archiving stuff and making sure that the history is preserved. It's about bringing that to life for people who are interested in it. I would love a Who's This Guy tour around all the portraits. You see all these different people hanging on the walls. And you just think, like, you kind of get to know them. When you're at the school, you recognise these guys because you've been walking past them every day for 7 years. No idea who some of them are. Like, how can there be so many portraits in one place? So, yeah, a Who's This Guy tour would be awesome. But, I mean, have you got any plans coming up for the next, calendar year?
To be honest, because I've just had the Jubilee sort of... it was not just a blog. I created a video. I don't know if you've seen that as well. Oh my god! And that was
In fact, where can people watch that if they want to go and watch? Because it's definitely worth watching.
Oh, there is a Vimeo link. If you go onto
I'll put it in the notes for this podcast. Actually, in the show notes description bit.
Fantastic! I think it's on the foundation website as well. But that would be brilliant. So that was a really big project for me. I'd sort of first time interviewing people, first time sort of editing and putting all of that together. So generally for the next few months, it's going to be sorting everything out that I hadn't sort of done. Yeah, I'd sort of put on the back burner almost. So a lot of cataloguing is my next. It's very rock and roll. It's sitting down and putting data into an Excel spreadsheet. It's great. Actually, I do really enjoy it, so that's sad.
I love nothing more than an Excel spreadsheet, especially when it's colour-coded.
Ooh.
Stuff like that really gets me going.
You have fancy spreadsheets, wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. it's been lovely to speak to you. I usually end with a question about what characteristic would you say has helped you the most in your life and career since leaving King Edward's. Obviously, you didn't go to the school, but I mean, how would you describe, like, what characteristics can you see as a whole that come out of King Edward's? Is that a really difficult question?
No, I mean, yes and no. You're all very, very confident, which is fantastic. Speaking to yourself today and certainly some of the old Edwardians I've spoken to, you're all, you know what you're doing. you're turning up, you're doing the thing, and this will be the outcome, and it will always be good. And it's a very admirable quality that, you know, you meet someone and they know exactly what they're doing, or at least certainly appear to, and, you know, this is what's going to happen today, and this is the thing, and it'll work. Actually, I think that is brilliant. A really good quality from pretty much every old Edwardian that I've met so far. So, yes, confidence.
Charlotte Gallant, the Foundation Archivist. Thank you ever so much for your time today on Ed Talks. It was great to meet you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Ed Talks. I hope that you've enjoyed today's conversation. If you have, it would be great if you could subscribe to this podcast on whatever app you're listening on, so you can keep up to date with future episodes. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, then we'd really appreciate it if you could leave your feedback in the review section. If you're listening on a platform where you can't leave your comments, then please do email me with your feedback. My email address is ben@soundrebel.co.uk. If you would like to feature on this podcast as a guest, then please email Adelaide Bailey at the Development Office. Her email address is aab@kes.beeham.sch.uk. That's aab@kes.beeham.sch.uk. She's also the person to email with any news that you think should be featuring in Old Ed's publications, either in print or online. Finally, if you think a podcast would enhance the communications of your business, organisation or charity, then I'd love to talk to you about producing it. My email address again is ben@soundrebel.co.uk.